Morning, everyone. Morning. Welcome to front. You guys are all chipper today. I like it. Is that you? I want to start today by telling you a little story of to get to know me a little bit. This is going to get us into what I want to talk about today in a larger context. So when I went to school, my undergrad's mostly in engineering, which makes sense. Literally square Vince, right? And I was taking a bit of a break after my third year, and I went and got a job at a place called Mountain Sports Company. It was this little shop that was just opening up. It was right on the corner, just off 82nd Ave and Calgary Trail. Does anyone know Edmonton? You know where the McDonald's is? Come on, people. By the McDonald's. There we go. Hey, thank you. Every day I'd sit in my office, like in the morning, and the McDonald's smell would be wafting into my office. I'd walk in, it was still there, it had the lines. I'd walk to the back of the line, my lady would look at me, wave, and have my order ready for me when I walked up. That's McDonald's. Anyways, that's not the story I want to tell you guys today. So the store we were in, it was an outdoor store, kind of like MEC, kind of before MEC. So we had a section of knickknacks in the store, some backpacks, kayaking gear. We had some clothing, jackets and stuff like that. And so the whole point of this store is to sell things, right? And so I'd often watch people walk in, and they would basically do this. They'd walk in right down the middle of the store. There's as far there and as far there. They'd walk in, go like this, and then they'd turn around and walk out. And I was like, and then sometimes they'd walk in, do the same thing. And they'd say, do you guys have backpacks? And I'm like, that massive section of backpacks right over there? Oh, yeah. So I thought, what if we could figure out a way, instead of people walking in and then walking back out again, what if we could figure out a way to get them to walk through the store? And so what we started doing is we started moving things. We'd do things like this, what if I move this display there? Then we'd all sit back and watch, drinking our coffees. It was like rats in a maze. And what we found is as we moved things, people started moving through different sections of the store. There's one aisle that no one would ever go through. So we moved a few things and all of a sudden everyone would walk down that aisle. And they'd find the thing that they're looking for. Oh, hey, this little knick-knacky thing I needed. Or, oh, there's the backpacks. So I just walked right by them. And so over time, what we realized is how you set up space changes how people behave. And it was the subtlest little things. We would literally move a display just a few inches over, and it would change how people do it. If they could see the back of the store, they would often walk down that aisle. If they couldn't, they'd go, and then they'd turn and go a different way. So today we're going to talk about space. And what I learned at Mountain Sports Company is that the space around us changes our behaviors, but that's not the only thing I think space does. I don't know if you guys know this, but I was married for 12 years. And so during that time that I was married, my ex-wife was an artist. And so we lived in a couple different places, dodgy little apartments. We're both in school. We have no money. But the look of our house always mattered deeply to her. And not like the outside of the facade of the house, so the neighbor's like, wow, that's a big house. None of that nonsense. It was how the house was inside. If the color of the wall was off, it would drive her around the bend. In order for me to understand how she felt, I would imagine that a wall color that's not great is like putting a chair on its side in the middle of the hallway that I'd have to step over every time I went to the bathroom. It just drove her nuts. And so over time, she would just constantly be working on stuff. And I didn't really notice it. I was kind of, that jerk husband who was like, it's not a big deal, whatever. Until we got divorced. And so I bought the house that we lived in together from her, and she moved all of her stuff out. Very same house that used to be homey and nice and lovely. I remember sitting there on my couch with my big-ass TV in front of me and my stereo, and that's it. Kind of looking around going, ooh, this doesn't feel very good anymore, does it? And honestly, I didn't really know. I got that her stuff was gone. And it wasn't just that. It was kind of like the knickknacks and the pictures and things like that. It was all this stuff that makes a house feel homey.
my house felt like a dorm room. Or maybe like a bachelor's pad. Or like maybe minimalism gone horribly wrong, right? There's just nothing there but a couch and a TV. Like that's all there is in the house. It wasn't designed that way. It was just because that's all I could figure out. And I'd go into the house and I'd look around and go, oh, this doesn't feel very good. I got nothing. So I just go sit on the couch and watch TV because I didn't know how to fix it. But what I found is, and I found through kind of her influence, space changes us psychologically too, doesn't it? It was just the same house, but it felt different. It didn't feel like a home. It felt like just a place you go to watch TV. So basically, I'm coming to you today not really understanding space. This is kind of a growing awareness for me. So I'm coming completely out of ignorance, and I'm going to try and teach you guys some stuff that you probably already know, but whatever, we're going to figure it out together. But what I realized through this whole process is my lack of understanding of space and how space impacts us messed up how I read the Bible. Because the Bible talks a lot about space. Those are the sections, has anyone read the beginning of the Bible? You don't need to put up your hands because it's kind of, no one has. There's a whole section in like the Pentateuch where they talk about how to set up the tabernacle. Super boring, you just jump past a few chapters. And it goes on for chapters and chapters and chapters. I just jumped past them because I was like, I got nothing, whatever. But today I want to go back and revisit those because I think there's some truth in them. And not like truth, it happened truth. Not that's what I'm getting at. What I mean is kind of an awareness of humanity that's important for us to be conscious of. So I'm just going to prepare you guys a little bit here today. We're going to do something we've never done here at Friend Church. And it's going to involve you getting out of your seat. So just mentally prepare yourself for that for just a second. There's a shaking of heads. I gave you a few minutes. Just give it, let it warm it. Warm up to the idea. It'll come. It'll feel good. You guys all know I went to school for hermeneutics, which is how you go from text to meaning. Today we're going to do an architectural hermeneutic. Right? You guys are all excited, right? You all know what architecture is, or kind of mostly, right? I'm going to push that a little bit. Hermeneutics, you guys know too, but you just don't know that you know. So let's say I tell you a line in a movie. You know, is she dead? If you're watching a horror movie, what does that line mean to you? You know, the psycho killer woman, she's like, you know, we shot her 16 times, and we're hoping that she's dead. She's not going to kill us all, right? Is she dead means, I'm freaked out. Is she dead? What you're doing is you're asking a very specific set of questions based on the genre of the film. It's a horror movie, meaning, is the person going to kill us? If it's a medical thriller genre, if that's the hermeneutic you apply to this, and I say, is she dead? What are you thinking now? You're thinking, doctor, did you save her? Is she dead? You know, will our love last forever? So you guys do hermeneutics all the time. It's why when you get to a movie that's like a genre bender, where it's kind of like mixed genre, it kind of messes with your brain because you don't know what to do with it because your brain understands hermeneutics. And when they play with that, it just messes you up. So really what you guys do is when you're watching a movie, you're doing hermeneutics. You're doing what I study. Now today we're going to do architectural hermeneutics, which means we're going to ask architectural questions, first of the space we're in, and then of the Bible. Now, I spent a bunch of time trying to figure out how to get you guys to experience this, and the only way I came up with is if you guys would be willing, I'd like to take you on a field trip. You good with that? So I want you, you don't have to, you can stay here, I'll keep my mic on so you can kind of hear what's going on. But if you're open to it, I want you guys to all get up, and we're actually going to walk out of here, I'm going to take you on a tour of the building. Everyone cool with that? Okay, let's do it, come on. Follow me, everybody. Come on over. Okay, how we? You guys are like, I don't know about this, Clausen. Come on out. Can you kind of come in here? I want you kind of looking up at the church here, if you can. Okay, we're going to call that close enough. So come out here if you can see me. Did you guys know that this building used to be a United Church? So this actually used to be a United Church. I want to thank
Anyone listen to the podcast ever when you're not here? So Kevin Mullen, one of the guys on the podcast team, is an architect. He couldn't be here today, otherwise he would have done this. He's taking a tour of architecture. I don't know where he is. But anyways, I sat down with him and he explained to me a whole bunch of stuff about this building that I had no clue about. Come on over here, you guys. Have you guys ever thought why the building is up there when the street level is down here? That was the first thing he said to me. I thought, well, why didn't they just make the church this level? And he's like, oh, no, this wasn't a random thing that they did. They did this very deliberately. So there's this idea in architecture that says, this is the public space where we are. It's out here. We all talk with full voices out here, right? People can run through. There's going to be kids running through. There's dog crap on the grass. This is public space. But they deliberately made stairs so that you would have a transition from public space here to a different set of spaces up there. So this isn't just some random thing that they were like, I don't know, let's put a staircase in there, whatever. They deliberately made it raised. Now, if you look at lots of temples and stuff in the Bible, anything that's important, they raise up. There's almost this psychological idea that things that are raised up are more important than things that are lower down. It's interesting, isn't it? So now I want you guys just to be conscious of, as you walk up the stairs with me, just feel the difference of transitioning from this space to the next space. Okay? So come on up. Do you notice the shift in space as you walk from down there to here? There's this, as you're walking up the stairs, there's this kind of feeling of, okay, I was down there and now this is a separate space. It's still fairly public, right? We can see what's going on, but it feels more separate from the rest of the world, doesn't it? Originally, when this building was designed, this wasn't here. So this space would have been a long step up here with this gone. This was for accessibility after. Again, what did you notice? Why didn't they just make the porch area go to the same level as that? No. They deliberately made it so that you have to go up another set of stairs to go into the next space. This isn't like a random thing. The designers, so when I was talking to Kevin, he's like, oh, no. They spend hours making this stuff happen. Now take a look at the space here. What do you notice? It goes from this really wide space here, and it gets narrowed into the doorway. The columns here on the side, he's like, do you think that they needed those columns? I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm an engineer. Seems like weight bearing. He's like, no. They deliberately are trying to bring you into this space. The next space is, you look at it, how tall and narrow it is. It brings us into this space and it kind of starts getting your brain to start looking up. So you go from this public space to a semi-public space. They're transitioning us. Then you're going to go up two stairs and you're entering these huge doors. Now look at the size of the doors compared to me. This is not a normal sized door, is it? And it's quite high. It's, again, what it's doing is it's bringing you in and drawing you up. And it has this feeling of we're going from public space to something different. Make sense? You guys starting to see all this stuff? Again, it's not random. The engineers in the room are like, no, it's just all about weight bearing and I'm watching you. Look at all the windows on the top there. Again, it's all designed to bring your eyes in and have you feel this sense of kind of up feeling. So now when you walk in, come walk in the doors. We're just going to go into the lobby. So this is kind of another transition space. They would call this a transitional space that's going to take us from this public part of our lives to someplace different. So just notice as you walk up, again, you're going to go up two stairs, through a doorway, and then notice how it feels going to the next space. Come on in.
What do you notice when you come into this space? Oh, even hear my voice. I don't talk as loud here because it feels, you know, so this space, you don't want to use your outside voice. We talk about kids, outside voices, inside voices. This space has a different feel to it, right? It's a bit more intimate. Now, if you look, the ceiling's been domed. They didn't do that again randomly. It wasn't like they were like, well, I got nothing better to do, so let's put a little knock in the roof here. That's all very deliberate. If you notice on the side of these, you see these beams? This is holding up the balcony. And so it's open all the way through to the balcony. And you see the light coming in? Again, they've deliberately made this space so that it feels wider, but still quite narrow. So you're getting this space. It doesn't feel kind of like where you come in the door and you want to bend over because it feels like oppressive. It's got an open sense to it, but you can feel the difference from that space to this space, can't you? It feels different. Now look at the size of the doors. See the doors that we came in? Massive doors, right? I can hardly touch. You've made them narrower. What we're doing is we're starting to bring people in, not we, the architects. They're bringing you in through these different transitional spaces. We know that humans don't do well from public space to sacred space. You do better, or we do better, if you give them steps. And so all the different spaces we've gone through are designed to help you transition from a public place of your life to something different. Even this roof. They didn't need to put this roof in here. They're doing it because we like a certain amount of coverage above us. You know, wide open sky, it's like, well, the birds are going to come attack us, or, you know, whatever our fear is. This feels a bit more homey. It's not so low that it feels oppressive. It's just the perfect height. Again, the architects are building spaces that help us feel certain things. So now as you walk through the space, they've deliberately narrowed us down from this public space. They've raised us up. They've brought us through a narrower space. This space is long. So when you come in, it's wide and it's not very deep, right? Now feel what happens as you walk into the main space. So just feel yourself walk in the door and kind of notice what happens when you come out. You notice where you guys are all looking. You guys are looking up. The architect built this space, so when you enter from that area, again, perfectly centered, you walk in, there's this kind of openness where you get your body kind of like looks up and you start to experience things. The space is long and narrow this way, so remember the lobby was this way. Now we have this long space, so you're looking down this long area. All the windows are high up. We block some of them. There's a sense of this kind of height of the roof and then light coming in from above. If we took down the screen, if you take that down, there's a bump out there and there's windows all the way along the side. Again, to have this sense of drawing your eyes up. And for some reason, we as human beings, when our eyes are drawn up, it feels different. The Jewish community built a whole section of sculptures in here. Originally, this was just a domed ceiling that was quite high. They built this all. So again, it has this feeling of a bit more warmth than the original space. But notice as you walk in here next time, you walk up the stairs, feel the transition in space and how it impacts you. Now, why did I make you guys all walk outside and do things that we never do at church and break all the rules? And I'll tell you why. Let me read a section from the Bible. This is written probably 4,000 years, give or take. It's written in the voice of God, but I don't think it's meant to be that. Often what they would do is they would put things that were really wise in the voice of God or in the character of God. So let me just read it to you. Then make the courtyard for the tabernacle enclosed with curtains of finely woven linen. On the south side, make the curtains 150 long. Make the curtains same on the north side. The curtains on the west end of the courtyard will be 75 feet long. The east end of the courtyard, the front, will also be 75 feet long. The courtyard entrance will be on the east end, flanked by two curtains. The curtains on the right side will be 22.5 feet. The curtains on the left will be 22.5. Who cares, right? But now that you guys have experienced space, and now that you guys all have an architectural hermeneutic, which you all do, right? Notice it. It's long and narrow, right? Now just think about it for a second. We talked about public space and then into private space or sacred space. Originally, the culture that they were in, they did this thing called sacrifice. And what it really was their way of kind of going, I want to give up something in the present to maintain a better future. And it always involved butchering animals. Now, if you have a whole flock of sheep or goats or whatever you do, and you need to butcher an animal, you're butchering them all the time, right? You need a snack, you butcher an animal, cook it. It's right, like, you know, the sheep are right there. You're cooking the other sheep right next to them. A little bit creepy, I know, but it's kind of how you did it. Why would they say, okay, wait a second. Let's build an enclosed courtyard away from our animals, away from everything, and we're going to do the same activity we could have done right there. We're going to do it inside this courtyard. Why would they have done that? I wonder if over years, centuries, maybe they started to realize, wait a second, when we do this ritual here, it's kind of like, eh, it's okay. But when we do it in there, it's like the ritual, something better happens. It's more impactful. When we have a space set aside for spiritual things, it impacts us. Why is it that we have a space here? You all can listen to the podcast, right? I don't have a lot of facial expressions, so you're not missing a whole lot if you're not here. Why do we come here? Because it's not there. Right? There is where our work that hasn't been done is still there. The stuff we're supposed to get figured out is still there. The mail we haven't opened is still there. The fight we had with our family member, it's still all there. And when we physically come here, it feels like it's separate, doesn't it? The very same thing we can do there, here it feels a little bit different. Now take it a step further. Every temple or every cathedral you go to in the States. I was at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Insane. Like just, they should sell that place. I'm not sure who would buy it, but they should sell it and just feed the entire world for like 10 billion years or something. I don't know. But if you look at the space, it's narrow, tall, with light coming in from the top, right? Almost every great cathedral is built almost the same way. Narrow, long, you enter in the middle, you walk down a corridor, there's lights to the top. A lot like this space. And if you think about the temple, the tabernacle that we just described, it's a long, narrow space with curtains. So you're not looking at, you know, is your dog chasing your goats out there? You know, and is so-and-so gossiping to so-and-so about such-and-such out there? You're not, all that stuff is blocked out. There's just this moment, and you have these kind of quiet spaces, and when you look up, it's the greatest of all light. You have the entire sky above you. Talk about an amazing feeling place. So I ask you, why am I telling you all this? Why am I talking about what could be called holy spaces? And when I say holy, I just mean things that are set apart for a specific thing. That's what holy means. I know it's supposed to mean something, but really that's what it means. When you do something in one space that's set aside for anything, it's not holy. When it's set aside, they had a word for that. So we spent all this time talking. We took a field trip. We walked out. We talked, looked at the Bible, had this whole architectural hermeneutic. Why? Because I want to ask you guys, how's your space doing? How is your spiritual space? Do you have a space that's set aside for spiritual things? It can be here. It can be walking in, you know, the garden someplace. It could be going to the mountains. Do you have a space set aside for your spirituality? Because if our spiritual ancestors are right, if we're trying to do it all in the same space, you know, cooking dinner, answering emails, doing our workout, and then having spiritual space at the same time, it doesn't really work, does it? How is your spiritual space? There's a reason why our ancestors often had a wall where they would put up stuff, and it was like, there's a cross there, or there's a little display of stuff. That was their spiritual space. For me, it's a church. Now, let me push it a bit further. If this is your spiritual space, how does it feel if you turned off your phone right now? My phone's buzzing and binging and telling me, you know, everything that's happening in the world, right? It doesn't care about my space. It just cares about getting my attention. How does this space feel if we change the psychic dimensions of the space? What if you came in here and turned off your phone? Now, parents with young kids who are downstairs, please do not turn off your phones. Because when we need to get a hold of you, that's how we do it. So you all, I'm sorry, we're just going to wreck your space a little bit. How does it feel where you sit in this space? You notice you often sit in fairly similar places? It's kind of like I know you. It's like, hey, you guys. My camera's over there, yeah. You guys all sit in the same spot. What happens if you move to a different part of the space? What if happens if you sit closer to the front or closer to the back? How does it shift the feeling of this space? How does it shift the spiritual impact of this space? Think about who you sit with. Think about what you wear. All of it impacts space, doesn't it? Now, if you're anything like me, this feels like you're in kindergarten and there's someone with a PhD trying to talk to you about space. And I'm going, I kind of, maybe, possibly a little bit get what you mean. But let's try and push it a bit different way. We are halfway through the summer right now. Everyone relaxed? You're all right? We can go back to work right now. You don't have to worry about it. How is your emotional space? Because just as delineating space, creating a separate area where we do spiritual things, what if we think about it in terms of our emotional life? I was just in Portland a couple weeks ago, and they had these amazing Chinese gardens. Has anyone been to these things? It's insane how much work and effort is put into creating space. And then they'd have this little path with a rock, and you'd go stand on the rock, and it would be a whole new set of spaces. It was incredible. Do you have a space that recharges you? Do you have a space set aside in your life to recharge you after a crazy year? Think about it for a bit. Where do you recharge? Do you do it in the middle of the craziness of life? Do you think that's going to work? The wisdom of 6,000 years ago, they already figured it out long before we did, right? No, delineate space. So where is there a space to recharge? How does your, again, technology, originally I was going to call this message the Kindle. Anyone know the Kindle? A friend of mine had a Kindle, and he's like, Vince, you got to get a Kindle. I'm like, you're an idiot. Why would I get a Kindle? It's like, does nothing. He's like, that's the point. It's a great reading experience. I was like, dude, that's the dumbest device ever. Why would anyone spend $150 on a device that does nothing? You know why? Because it's a device that does nothing. All it does is I can read a book on it. I think there might be a web browser, but it's like, you know, remember those flip phones we had? It had a web browser that, like, yeah, it didn't work. This is the most relaxing space I have. When I read the same book on my Kindle app on my phone, and I have notifications popping up, and I have things going on, and I'm looking something in that, oh, that reminds me of this whole other thing I want to look up, and then, oh, what's my schedule like this week? And then, oh, hey, did Buddy get back to me about that? No. This isn't delineated space. This is every space in one device. This is Vince's relaxing. I take it with me wherever I go, and I just read my book, because that's all it does. Someone figured out in kind of a psychic space that we need delineated space still in our lives. So how have you created space to relax? And I'm not just talking about time space, although that's part of it. I was up dirt biking with Josh, one of the guys from our DFW team. We went to McLean Creek, and on top of Suwannee Ridge, you go over this top of this ridge overlooking Elbow Falls and the mountains, and we sat down, and I just sit down there, and I can instantly feel my body just go, whew. It's like, yeah. That's the space that relaxes me. Now, how about relational space? If this works for our spirituality and our emotions, how does it work relationally? Do you have space set aside to connect with the people that you love, that you want to connect with? I'm going to guarantee something here. I have no kids, so this is going to be, if I'm off, I'll buy you a beer. If you have a 2-year-old little kid hanging out in a blanket fort you made in the, you know, spare room or in the living room, is going to be way more connecting than doing it at the kitchen table where you have to sit up straight. Isn't it? If I want to spend time with someone I love and the whole time I'm doing this, the space is wrong, isn't it? There's no connection. We exist to help you guys grow, develop, become the healthiest versions of yourself so that that spills out into this world and changes everything for the better. That's what Friend Church is about. And so if your spirituality is on point, if your self-care is on point where you're relaxing and recovering, you got to this point in the year going, holidays are great, but I don't need them. I'm not burnt out. I've set aside space. I've created space my whole year to stay healthy emotionally. And now when I want to connect with someone that I love, I can put all of myself into it. So ask yourself, if we're about helping you guys live His love in this world, and love comes through the connection with people, how are you connecting with the people you love? How are you creating space that magnifies that connection? Just like we saw in the temple, right? If we kill the goat over there, it's like, meh. We kill the goat in here, whoa. How are you creating space in your lives to do the things you need to do? Okay, that's it. Thank you very much for being willing to take a field trip with me. I know that was way outside the ordinary. I appreciate it. Today, I really just wanted to help you guys be aware of something that I'm not aware of. It's only growing on me now, trying to figure out how to create space. But I would encourage you to figure out these spaces, not only physical, not only time, but also psychic. I love my phone. Everything's on my phone. But I'm telling you, this doesn't create space very well. We do this because we want to be the healthiest versions of ourselves so that we can go out and make this world a better place. I hope this today will get you started on that path. Next week, we're going to talk about beauty and how it impacts us. Have a great week. Enjoy the hot weather out there. Thanks, everyone.